Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight of the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to the 60th Supertone Show.
Thank you.
Led Zeppelin, The Lemon Song, from their second album, Led Zepp 2, released on the 22nd of October 1969 on Atlantic Records label. Now.
I can't speak. It's all your fault. This song.
Yeah.
Is the really. Labour of love for me. Explain.
Well, when you were learning bass... You know, you did ask me. You did ask me.
I did ask
what,
you.
What musicians?
Oh, hi, darling. What musicians should I, you know,
should you listen
study?
To? And I said, well, you know, the four that you really need to look at, considering the genre and style of stuff that we're doing,
go on.
Is John Paul Jones, of course, Andy Fraser, of course, Jack Bruce, of course, and Carl Radle.
Yes.
Who is the bass player, or was, sadly demised now, the bass player with Eric Clapton for quite a long time in the early 70s. And, of course, this, when you first heard it, you didn't like it, did you? You said, I'm not going to play this. It's horrible. I don't like it. And what's all this lemon business?
It's so true.
Are you doing chicken? I don't know if it's anything to do with chicken, but anyway.
You said, actually, study that. If you've learned that, you've cracked it. You've cracked a big part of becoming a bass player.
Well, the thing is in this is that the bit in the middle where it's like it goes into the bass solo and all that, but it's got every little figure virtually of blues bass playing in there.
Yes, you can hear it. It's
you can
beautiful.
Hear it. So it's like, you know, major, and it uses all his stock of blues sort of bass.
It's all
figures.
On the table, isn't it? Let's have a party.
So, and I thought, well, that's one thing. If you learn this, then you've got a whole lot of stuff in your armory ready to proceed.
So there's exactly. You can laugh, right? But I remember coming back into the kitchen and saying to you, "No way, no way!" And I didn't like it. Then a couple of months later, you know, like the challenge, it gets under your skin, and I was like, "Oh, let's have a look at
well,
this
you,
thing
it is,
again."
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, and then how many months did it take me? But I notated it by ear without any
tab
or anything like that, and it took me probably. Oh, a good 4 months, 5 months to really work it out so that I could play it. And then, in fact, I was halfway through it and we got invited to guest, didn't we?
That's right.
In 16 Toneladas in Valencia, which is a big major kind of music venue in Valencia.
Yeah.
And it was a major rock night. And we got invited and I got invited to play the Lemon Song with you.
Yeah, and I was singing.
You were.
I wasn't playing guitar.
No. And I literally, like, rocked up on stage, whacked this really shit amp up on full because it was terrible, and I just went, let's give it some,
this was
head down.
Basically a TC Electronics
oh, it was,
based.
It wasn't good. Thing, it sounded like
blew
a,
up, but.
It sounded like a, it was horrible. Well, anyway, so I just thought, this is me as a new bass player with this crowd, hundreds and hundreds of people out there, and I just remember going, what? I've got to be heard, and head down, and I managed to play the whole song.
You did.
And at the end, you know, your hands go up in the air, you're like, oh, Yes.
Yeah, it was funny because all these bass players in the audience were actually putting the head in the hands, going, "Oh no, she's going for it!" You know, it's like the, you know, in Zoolander when he puts his hands down his pants and he pulls his underpants out, you know, without actually undoing them. Very, very funny. Anyway, but Led Zeppelin, you know, what can we say about them? No, really. All I can say is that I've got slight insight in the fact that this was actually recorded in Los Angeles, because when they did the first album, what they did in the masterstroke, really, or Peter Grant's masterstroke anyways, they went straight to America, and within a few shows that actually gone from nothing to major. They started off on the East Coast, but by the time they got to the West Coast, they were a major act, and they were making so much money, they went back again. As Page was known, of course, because he'd been there with the Yardbirds.
Yeah.
So he would, you know, with Jeff Beck and stuff. And it was so big. So they didn't have a lot of time because they kept going back, and they were writing this stuff in hotel rooms and just recording it on the fly wherever they could. So, you know, there's a feast of engineers on this record. People like Eddie Kramer, of course, Andy Johns. You know, it's a feast of beauty and excellence in terms of recording. But you know something? I've read the book recently, but I can't remember which studio. He does mention it. I can't remember which studio this was done in. I'm very sorry about that. Okay, it doesn't mention it. It just said it was done in Los Angeles, and I can't actually remember.
That's true, and I didn't come across that in my research either.
No. Anyway, it's you know, it's a brilliant the whole album's a brilliant piece of work. Very difficult to say about it, you know. I think Page's guitar, you know, was at its, you know, you could hear him getting his style together. John Paul Jones had all the chops. He knew exactly what he was doing. Session bass player knew exactly what he was doing.
Oh yeah,
you know, Bonham was a crazy man, and you know, just a beautiful drummer doing all that stuff. Plant was just going mad, you know. Very sexually explicit lyrics.
Yeah.
Bob's having a dream there. She's under the desk. That's one of our Labradors.
She always likes to kind of have like dreamy sleep speak when we start recording.
Well, it's okay.
That's lovely. Like that.
She just joins.
She's so chilled out.
Yeah.
Yes. And so carry on. So you're getting the start. You can see it's formative and actually it's developing its maturity.
Absolutely, yeah. And it just ended up being a beautiful record, if you can call it beautiful, you know. But it is magnificent statement of rock and roll, and probably was, you know, the start really of that real, you know, blues rock thing.
hast mich. Du hast mich. Du hast mich. Du hast mich. Du hast mich gefragt. Du hast mich gefragt. Du hast mich gefragt und ich hab nichts gesagt.
Rammstein, Du hast, which is the second single from the second studio album, Sehnsucht, which means nostalgia, and it was released on the 19th of July in 1997 on the Motor Music label. That's a subsidiary of Universal Music Group and now an independent label based in Berlin.
Probably due to the fact that Rammstein are probably one of the biggest rock and roll bands in the world. You know, yeah, there's Metallica and all these. I mean, Metallica on a different level. I mean, but Rammstein, they pack out massive stadiums. And the reason these were brought to our attention, I've got to confess here, we do not have this on vinyl. It's one of the rare tracks that we play that's not on vinyl. Because we were recommended this band by our big friend, and well, he's a marvellous guy, a guy called Dave Swindells, who does guitar teching and teching in the Isle of Man here. One of our greatest friends, great supporter, beautiful man. And he loves Rammstein. He's got Rammstein t-shirts and he's been trying to get us into Rammstein for years. Ever since we sort of came back to the Isle of Man here, he keeps putting it on in gigs, you know. And actually, I'm starting to really like it.
And, it's the war of attrition.
Because it's actually really melodic. And his voice, they have a sound. There is no doubt about it. Singing in German is not easy. You know, it doesn't sort of fall off the tongue, does it, really?
Well, I think it suits this style of music because it sounds very kind of forceful and industrial. And it's, du hast gesehen, du musst, you know. It's very much that.
But they made a whole pile of money because was it, what films had been involved with that? I can't remember now. Is it The Matrix?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. It's the soundtrack for The Matrix, yeah. Brilliant. Can you imagine this, can't you?
Oh, yeah.
With Nero just go.
And industrial metal and stuff, you know. I mean, it is an amazing sound. And surprisingly enough, I just checked the what that key is. It's an E. And normally you associate with a lot of really, you know, big heavy metal bands of big drop tuning people who tune down from the, you know, the regular tune of E down to D or C even, or B sometimes, you know. And it's in it, but it sounds very heavy. Great guitar sound. Very clean, recorded in Malta, I believe, as well.
Yeah, it was, actually, at Temple Studios.
Temple Studios, yeah.
What was interesting about this band, though, you know, because this is when we finally decided the other day to put a track on the show, didn't we, was you start bouncing, and we're just looking at each other going, oh, it's clean, there's a cleanness of the sound as well, and it's comedic. I mean, it's sometimes...
The lyrics are not particularly comedic in the Rammstein stuff, but it does sound it, yeah.
It makes me giggle, because I kind of don't take them seriously, and then I do. And I think this is, I mean, I would never deem to try and translate this, but I've just been on some of the forums just trying to look at what it actually means, and, you know, it's a wordplay, so I think there are more than one, two, three meanings, and I think you need to really... Because, you know, that's like saying, somebody interpreting a song in your own language, your native language, right? You might not get between the lines or whatever is intended. So you can imagine translating that, and I just think, oh, that's just asking for trouble. But something to do, it's a play on marriage vows or something, but I'm not sure. But this is what was interesting as well. These guys, right, there's six-man lineup formed in Berlin in 1994, and they're all hard hitters, right? And they were in different bands before, and one of them was called Orgasm Death Gimmick.
I Hear You Knocking by Dave Edmunds. He's Welsh, you know, from Cardiff. And released as a single in November 1970 and the first to be released on the MAM record label and later included in his first album, Rockpile. Dave Edmunds, Rockpile.
I think, is it MAM?
What did I say, man?
No, M-A-M.
Oh, right, okay. Well, it might be.
I was just thinking, is it the way that it's a Welsh pronunciation of mother, MAM?
Is that right?
Well, I think it might be, you know.
Well, the reason why I look at that, on the single, this comes off, I can remember it being a big MM. That's right, yeah. And if you look at it, it's got a green label. It's really, really cool. It's a really cool single. But I bought this very early on. And he plays all the instruments on this, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so, except for maybe the bass. I'm not quite sure about that one.
Right, okay. All right, bass. Yeah. Ooh, yeah, you don't want to be a guitar playing bass. You've been in trouble. It was recorded at Rockfield Studios, where Queen did a lot of work. And it's one
just
of those studios
down the road for
keeps,
me.
Yeah, it keeps popping up time and again. You know, Dave Edmunds, lots of people recorded there, you know, over the years. It was one of the first residential recording studios in the world, wasn't it?
It was,
and we went to visit it, did we not?
We did. It was great. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, with
that
Valencian drum, if you remember, Danilo.
Yes, that's right.
That's right. It was really
cool.
Got
a really good memory.
Yeah. And there's a great MCI board in there, the mixing console. Anyway, let's not go there. Let's not get too geeky.
See, yes.
But what I do love is that listening to it again on that, in the right-hand side of the cans or the stereo mix, that really clean guitar, it's got a tremolo in it. I've never noticed it before. It's quite subtle, but there is. And it's a really lovely production. And he produced it, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. You know? And the vocals, I think they piped in using a telephone line. So you've got that kind of thin nasal.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. What was quite interesting about this song, though, was that it was actually first recorded in 1955 because it was written by a guy called Dave Bartholomew.
Yeah.
And there was a guy, a New Orleans rhythm and blues singer called Smiley Lewis.
Of course.
I love these guys' names. And Smiley was one of the leaders in the emerging R&B style alongside like people like Fats Domino. And he got to number two in the Billboard R&B charts back in 1955. Now, with Dave Edmunds' version, well, he was actually thinking about recording a cover of Let's Work Together by Wilbur Harrison, but then Canned Heat went and released a cover of that song. And it was only when he was driving down the road and he heard I Hear You Knocking released, it was on the radio actually in Britain because Smiley Lewis had been released on United Artists in the UK, and he thought, hang on, the format's exactly the same, so he just swapped the songs.
Yeah.
So that's when he chose to do that. But Dave's version, right, this is fantastic. It was number one for 6 weeks in the UK charts, including the Christmas number one.
No!
Oh, yeah. It was number one in South Africa, number three in Canada and Germany, number four in two Billboard American charts, and number five in Australia. Now, how much of an amazing achievement is that?
It's incredible. I didn't know that. Well, they are, so that's fantastic.
Good on you, Dave. And the reason why we talk about Wales a lot is that obviously my grandmother, Betty Higgs, who's also sporting, she's our album cover lady.
Very famous.
On Blueberry Pie, she's very famous around the world. My nana, Betty, was born in Mica Morgan, and so I have Welsh connections and Welsh heritage, which I'm very proud of. And I also grew up in Ross and Wye, which is 10 miles from the Welsh border, so very much of that influence with Rockfield Studios just down the road. So for me, I feel very proud of my patch, as it were, you know, and so that's why we mention it.
Well, the interesting thing about this as well is the Rock Pile, the album Rock Pile.
Yes.
BJ Cole's on it, who played pedal steel on my second solo thing.
Yeah, The Knife.
The Knife, yeah. But he, great. And also Andy Fairweather Lowe was playing on it as well, who keeps popping up with alarming frequency. You know, he's everywhere, isn't he? You know, he works with Dave Gilmore.
Yeah.
You know, he's worked with Clapton. He's, you know, very interesting guy, Andy Fairweather Lowe. Well, perhaps we should play some of his stuff at some stage. Thank you.
Martin Simpson. And that's a song called Greystones from his album True Stories, which was released in 2009 on the Topic record label.
Love Martin Simpson, guitar player. He is magnificent. His use of open tunings, his use of the slide is fantastic. He's a thoroughly nice bloke as well, because we were talking, and we don't do this on purpose, but we were talking about BJ Cole before on I Hear You Knocking on the album Rockpile anyway. And BJ, I saw him with Martin Simpson and Keith Angel and Andy Seward and Andy Cutting at the Centenary Centre, because our friend on the island, Dave McLean, says you need to come and see this guitar player. And I'd never, frankly, I'd never heard of him. Well, I went, and I went for sound check, and I was absolutely blown away. And he came over, he said, "Your guitar, oh, just try this." And he gave me
one. No way.
Yeah. And they're a monstrous thing to play, because he's got a very heavy string on the top E. He uses a 16, I think it is, because he rests the slide on it. Very interesting technique, but he what a lovely bloke. And that's how I met Andy Seward, and that's how Andy Seward came to produce the album, The Knife, my second solo album. Because Andy, and he brought in all the band from this, including Andy Cutting, Keith Angel.
Yeah, on drums. And BJ.
Yeah, Andy Cutting on melodeon, and he was playing bass. So that's how it all happened. So that band is playing on my second album, incredibly enough. And the most interesting thing, which I don't think you've picked up on here, because you don't really know his name.
What?
That on the drums on this album as well, Greystones, and Greystones is Andy's studio instrument, because he produced it this as well, didn't he, Andy Seward?
Yeah, yeah.
Is a guy called Philip Selway.
Oh, I know.
Who is the drummer from Radiohead.
Indeed, he's Andy's best mate.
Yeah. And Andy Seward hates Radiohead. And he keeps getting tickets to go, and he keeps saying, "Go on, come see me. This is Phil Selway." And he won't go, because he doesn't like Radiohead. And I love Radiohead. And I said, "Well, can I not go instead?" And he said, "No, this is Andy, because he's from Yorkshire." Rather like Dave Swindells we were talking about earlier on, you know. How much?
Too bloody much.
Yeah, that's right. And incredible.
Yeah.
But very, very, he's a great guy, Andy. Fantastic, fantastic acoustic producer. That's what I wanted. I want somebody really acquainted with recording acoustic instruments. And I heard this record and bought it. And I thought, wow, 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 I've got to have this guy on the next record. And that's how it happened. Yeah.
You know, you've got to check out more of Martin Simpson, because I've got a folk background. So for me, I didn't really know much about him either, but I felt at home with the music and the style and that and intimacy and that nakedness. But with Martin, just to sort of conclude about him, it's honestly, you've got to listen to him. He's fantastic. He's been nominated 23 times in 11 years for the BBC Radio 2 Folk Awards. Yep.
23. Wow.
Yeah, including 9 consecutive years for Artist of the Year, and twice he won. I mean, he's amazing. He's been on Later with Jules numerous times. He's been on at the proms. And what they say about Martin, just if you could put him in like, you know, just like a, if you could hold him in your hand for a moment, just go, "Who are you?" Or, you know, the sense or the smell that like you'd have an orange. Mm. You'd say that he's one of the most visible examples of the relationship between the Celtic folk of the United Kingdom and American music, such as country and the blues. And when it branched away from the British sources as American immigrants became distant from their past countrymen.
Mm.
And Simpson's life kind of charts a similar journey. And he's one of the most technically gifted guitarists alive in the 2000s. And he was born in South Humberside. He moved to the United States. And he did loads of work out there, British folk rock, with loads of British folk rock figures. And now he's married to Kit Bailey, who's the daughter of singer Roy Bailey. And he goes out touring with Nancy Kerr and Andy Cutting. So he's on tour a lot. Mm. So go and see Martin.
Yeah, you've got to see him live. Buy the records, but go and see him live. Blue jean, I just met a girl named Blue Jean. Blue jean, she got a camouflage face in the money. Remember, they always let you down when you need them. Oh, Blue jean, is heaven really sweeter than Blue jean? She got a police bike. She got turned up.
You're listening to The Supertone Show with Susie Starlight and Simon Campbell of the Starlight Campbell Band.
And that was David Bowie and Blue Jean, released a single ahead of his 16th studio album Tonight on the 1st of September 1984 on EMI America label.
You know, I listened to that song, it's the first time I've really thought, I thought of Some Guys Have All the Luck, Robert Palmer. It had that feel. Yeah. So I've just checked up and Bowie releases 2 years after Robert Palmer did his version.
Is that right?
Yeah. And you can feel it because I thought, this is some guys have all the luck. Just the way, it's the feel of it.
Mm.
And that, and obviously you can, I think you can hear the influence there totally.
Well, he was a master plagiarist, Bowie, but what he did, he plagiarised and then moulded it out of all recognition what had done, and the actual original thing was so deeply buried, I think.
Yeah, but then we're all making plasticine figures with all different colours, so if you actually saw music and the influence, right, it's, you know, strips of plasticine you used to get as a kid, all different colours, right, I'll take a little corner of the blue and I'll have a little bit of the grey. Well, every sculpture you see is made up of everybody else's colours and stuff, so that, for me, is made it his own. I can feel that as well. It charted in the top 10 in the UK and America too, which is pretty darn cool.
Well, it came right after Let's Dance, didn't it?
Of course,
successful record, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
But the interesting thing about that, to me, is the feel of it. Every time it starts, I just start to sway. Do. It's got that beautiful groove, and created, of course, by the master. The master, Omar Hakim on drums.
Oh,
yeah.
You love drummers, don't you?
And Carmen Rojas on bass. What a great rhythm section. I mean, there are certain rhythm sections that Bowie used were just exceptional. Of course, the spiders and stuff. But, you know, this is a great one. I just love that feel. It's fantastic. And, you know, it's sort of very 80s sort of production, Hugh Padgham and Derek Bramble on guitar and guitar synth and some bass and stuff. But the interesting thing is Mark King was on that record on bass as well.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So Tina Turner, not this particular record, but on the album.
Okay.
And Tina Turner was on Iggy Pop, of course. You know, a big... But the blue-eyed soul thing, he was great at it, you know. We need a Young Americans and all that, and it's back with this. It's a track that a lot... It doesn't get played a lot.
No.
And I think it's sad because I think it's a great piece of music, you know.
And I think what with the song, it makes you feel like you've got shoulders because your shoulders go. There's something about that. But it was also launched as a 20-minute short film called Jazzing for Blue Jean, and it was directed by Julian Temple. So, you know, who did the Sex Pistols, Glastonbury, the Rolling Stones.
Oh, I remember seeing it now.
Well, the film won the 1985 Grammy Award for Best Video in Short Form. And later, that category was called Best Music Video, basically. So it won Best Music Video. And it was the only competitive Grammy Award that Bowie had won during his lifetime over three decades, although he won four Grammys for Black Star after he died. But that's incredible, isn't it?
Mm. Well, sadly missed.
Do you know what? We love, absolutely love this man.
PJ Harvey, MBE, Good Fortune, the second track and lead single from her fifth studio album, Stories from the City, Stories from the Sea, released on the 13th of November in 2000 on Island Records.
Wow, welcome to the show, Polly Jean Harvey.
We should have had her on before, really, because...
I know.
Yeah, it's one of those albums. I mean, Let England Shake was a great record, Did she win a Mercury for that? Was that right?
Oh, she's only won twice.
No.
Yeah, she's the only artist ever to win the Mercury Award twice. Well, she's phenomenal.
It's one of those British artists that you just can't believe how prolific and how great she is, you know, because there's a lot of depth to her music that you don't... The first thing you just don't see. I mean, the fact that Thom Yorke actually guests on this album Now, you know, that's saying something. Tony York and Radiohead, you know, he didn't really need to guess with anybody. And he's on this record, you know.
Yeah.
Isn't it funny, though, the connection, the thread that we have with these shows? Because we were talking about Phil Selwood, in Martin Simpson. Now we got Tom on this track. And then before we have BJ Cole. And it's a weaving interaction of musicians doing beautiful and interesting stuff. It's great. Great.
I love it when you get excited.
And that is why we must collaborate more. That is why we should be all going out and actually doing stuff together. Not having guitar battles on stage, but having, you know, creating beautiful music together.
And also about going out with your friends and actually sharing that with the musicians, because, you know, I always say that everyone wants to be on stage these days, and you need people to actually, you know, you need to go and listen to a band and be part of the audience. And because we all need each other to be there in different places. If, you know, too many cooks spoil the broth kind of thing.
It's
so when we're not playing, we love to go and hear other people, don't we? Because it's all part and parcel of being around and hanging out and just being inspired by it. But so
that's the thing, inspired, you know.
Yes.
You do. It's like when I saw Martin Simpson, and we mentioned that, you know, he inspired me to do a new record. And it really did. But that was the start of it, you know.
It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah, incredible.
So with PJ now as well, I've really, I've been thinking about her. So I'm trying to find a way of how do you have, you know, if you have your first cup of tea from a new blend that you've just bought, I'm thinking about tea because we've got this teapot, we haven't used it yet because we haven't got any loose tea, and I'm kind of probably tea on my mind. Anyway, so PJ Harvey, 8 Brit Award nominations, 7 Grammy nominations, 2 Mercury Prize nominations. And this is what they, if you want to have a flavour of her again, it's like they say, during the alternative rock explosion, there were several female singer-songwriters that rose to prominence, but very few have proved as distinctive or as widely praised as PJ Harvey. Over the course of her career, she's established herself as one of the most individual and influential songwriters of her era, and she explores themes of sex, love, and religion with unnerving honesty, dark humour, and a twisted theatricality.
Mm.
And I want to listen to more of her music.
Well, just to conclude here, I was reading an article about her some time ago now.
Yeah.
And apparently she gets up in the morning, she works every day from like 9 till 5 writing songs. And that's what she does. She gets up in the morning and writes songs. Wow. Wanna be an angel, you wanna be a star. Wanna play some magic on my guitar. Wanna be a poet, you wanna be my scream. You could be anything. Do you wanna be the lover of another? Undercover, you could even be the man on the moon. Do you wanna be the player? String. Let me tell you something, it just don't mean a thing. You see, it really doesn't matter when you're buried in disguise by the dark gloss on your eyes. Though your flesh has crystallized, still
couldn't be more wrong. You see, I really have to try.
Emerson, Lake and Palmer, Still You Turn Me On, from their fourth studio album, Brain Salad Surgery. I love that name. And that was released on the 19th of November in 1973 by their own record label, Manticore Records, and distributed via Atlantic.
We've got it downstairs in that very great cover that opens up with like a... It's a fantastic cover, beautiful cover, you know. Great band, Keith Emerson, sadly missed. I personally think he was one of the greatest British keyboard players, Hammond players. I know Rick Wakeman was up there and stuff, and John Lord. But I loved his playing. And I saw him at Liverpool Empire a long time ago when he stuck a knife.
That Lemmy gave him,
that's right, in the organ. And similarly pushed a C3 off stage into the orchestra pit. Of course, I didn't know what it was then. I just thought it was all good laughing. Now I'd be crying. But anyway, he did. And it was a great performance, you know. And they were doing this album. So it was fantastic.
It's another band, Emerson, Lake and Palmer. And then when I looked into it, so Keith Emerson was in the Nice and they shared a gig at Fillmore West with King Crimson. And then when Greg Lake left King Crimson, they got together and they recruited Carl Palmer, who was actually playing with the Crazy World of Arthur Brown and was also in Atomic Rooster.
Yep.
So that's those guys. And that's really the feel of who they are. And what I love about this band, which I didn't know about, is that they were greeted by the rock press and the public as something like conquering heroes, because they succeeded in broadening the audience for progressive rock from a mere hundred of thousands to tens of millions of listeners. And they created a major radio phenomenon as well. I mean, they were huge.
Oh, they're absolutely.
But you don't realise, because if you weren't around then and you didn't really like the music at the time, how are you going to know this stuff?
Oh, they were absolutely incredible, because actually they wrote really good songs. And that's the thing. This was produced by Greg Lake as well and recorded, as usual, at Olympic, AdVision and Mixed at Air Studios, which is the one that was in the centre of London. I'm just reading about it at the moment, actually. Between Regent Street and Oxford Street.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a marvellous production as well. I love his guitar sound, great bass, great mix.
Well, it's funny, they all say as well that they kind of prove that they were these classical rockers, they could compete for that arena scale audience, which they did. And over and above their own commercial success, they paved the way for other bands like Yes, who become actually probably one of their chief rivals, weren't they, during that time?
Absolutely.
I've got a question for you as well.
Go on.
Do you know what I could hear? You know that.
Yeah.
I heard Wishbone Ash.
More than likely. Well, it's the end of the show.
Oh my goodness, quick.
So.
Actually, no, I'm just timing as well. We've only got a few seconds to go.
Right,
thanks so much for listening.
And next week's the Doors.
Yes, I was going to say, next week's is our festive edition of the Supertone Show. We're on tour in the UK at the moment. We've got a 2-week UK tour with the Starlight Campbell Band. And we've Tuesday Music Night Club, and we're at the Iron Road in Pershore and the Bury Met in the Derby Hall. And then next week, we're up to Bannerman's in Edinburgh. We're going to South Shields at the Queen Vic, and then we're off to Bay at the Blues for Stockton-on-Tees for an acoustic, and finishing off at the Christmas party at Saltburn Blues Club. Woo!
Look forward to seeing you there.
filled with fire. If they